You know, it surprises me that you and Sati and Limette, that you guys don't podcast. For how much you guys are all over social media, it actually surprises me that you guys don't pick up your microphones.
I thought about it, like, I think around, like, my last birthday to, like, try and do a podcast, but I was scared of, like, the technology thing.
You should. You guys should do it. I imagine you'd be good at it. You guys all have, you guys are passionate as hell. So I really think you guys would bring something good to the table. Well, welcome to Wherever You Are. My name is Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to episode 80 of the Matinee Cast. It's the movie loving podcast of my movie loving website, thematinee.ca. Your home for cinematic passion and perspective. Today's guest is one I'm really excited to have on the show, and one I've been meaning to have on the podcast for quite some time now. You see, she's part of a circle of young bloggers whose passion in production keeps me inspired and keeps me pushing to be better. Not only that, but she's from a corner of the world the Matinee Cast has yet to visit, and as you should all know by now, I dig bringing international voices onto the show. She is the brains and talent behind Being Norma Jean, a site you can find at beingnormajean.blogspot.com. We're across a wire today to Calcutta, India, where I'm pleased to welcome Nikhat Zara to the show. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm really well. Thanks for being here today. Before we get into the action, we need to send some well wishes to a few members of our movie-going family. Three past guests of the show have had some additions to their family in recent weeks. So congratulations go out to Brad and Rachel Thoreau, who welcomed 6-pound, 12-ounce Zoe to their family. Congratulations also to Jonathan and Jandy Hardesty, who welcomed 7-pound, 1-ounce Karina into their family. And finally, congratulations to Dan and Aaron Heaton, who welcomed 7-pound, 15-ounce Etta to their family. These all happened within the span of like 3 or 4 weeks. So we wish them all the best during these happy times. Nick, you're not having a kid anytime soon, are you?
No.
Okay.
I'm scared of babies.
They're freaky sometimes, you know? It's like they're up to something. On episode 80, we'll be discussing Oz the Great and Powerful. We'll be taking listener feedback on directors returning to their roots and turn the record over to play the other side. Before that, though, we need to learn more about Nikhat. This is Know Your Enemy. So, Nick, you've listened to the show. You know how this goes. What was the first film you ever saw in the theater?
I actually don't know the first film I saw because neither of my parents decided to like keep track. But it was definitely something Bollywood. First memory I have of watching a film in its entirety is Titanic.
Okay.
And I was 5. It was huge. Like, I don't... In my memory, I haven't actually seen a Hollywood movie be this big in India. I mean, things like Harry Potter and Avatar and all that stuff, they had like, you know, like when they were opening, they were big. But yeah. Titanic was like major in India. It was really big. So like, I remember like being like in a huge crowd and I loved the movie. And like Jack Dawson was my first love. I fell in love with like redheads back then. And things like that. And that was probably the only time, oddly, that I didn't cry in the movie. Because ever since that, whenever I do watch the movie, I'm like a mess by the end.
I love the fact, how old did you say you were 5?
Probably 5. I was 97, so I must have been 5.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever felt older than I do right now. I was going to say maybe you were too young to understand how sad a story it was, but it had to be over there like it was here. Like, it was just crowds and crowds of people going to see this movie, right? Like, it almost feels like we haven't really had that happen all that often since then.
Yeah, it's not, and it's like a film that I understand why Indian crowds would love it. Because it has all the elements that Indian crowds love, you know, like the rich girl, poor boy, and they're really like good looking. And then there's like, in Indian movies, as much as they try to do effects, and they really do try nowadays, but it will never, I don't know when it will reach the level of Titanic. For like people over here, it was like magic. Like, we've learned, like, that's the film that teachers used to teach us to write like film reviews on. Because that was like the ideal film to do it on.
What was the last movie you saw?
The last movie I saw was Sofia Coppola's The Virgin Suicides.
Very nice.
Yeah, because the trailer of the new film came out, the teaser, Bling Ring. And then I was just like, Because it has like the criminal, the darker aspect that for other movies, I love all the movies, but they were, it was like the most pronounced in The Virgin Suicides. So I just wanted to like go back, and I felt like watching it again.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I'm actually kind of hesitant now with Sofia Coppola. Like, I really like The Virgin Suicides, and I really like Lost in Translation as well. But Marie Antoinette didn't do anything for me. It was very pretty.
It's my favorite one, like Marie Antoinette.
Oh, really?
It's my favorite Sofia Coppola. It's in my top 10 of all time.
Oh, okay, okay. Sorry, I don't know. For me, it was really, really beautiful, but the story didn't do as much for me as I wish. And then I never saw. What was her last one? Somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sure. If your favorite director has a new movie coming out, that always inspires you to go back and watch their stuff. I go through that all the time. I can appreciate that.
I saw the new Star Trek teaser today. I'm so going to like watch Star Trek.
It never ends, right? You see a new trailer and you end up like pulling the old movies from the shelf. What's one of the worst films you've ever seen?
I don't even know if you've heard of it. It's called Legally Blonde, which is the third part in the Legally Blonde series.
Oh my goodness. No, I have not. I did not. I've heard of the first one and the second one. I did not know there were more.
No, I neither did I, because this was like when I had just moved back to India after my school, and cable TV was like my only source of movies at the time. So this was coming on TV one day, and I just decided to sit down and watch it. And it's about Elle Woods' British cousins who are twins who come to like an American high school on a scholarship. It's
oh,
so bad.
Oh, man.
I mean, I like liking movies, okay? I never give movies zero, okay? I find something to like in them, and then I give them some, like one or two, somewhere, something I will give. But, like, this was so bad. It ends with, like, a student court case about, like, someone stealing the exam papers or something, and they solve it by, like, sneaker marks.
Right.
Like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to suppress the memory of the movie as best as I could, but it is so bad. And,
It sounds like they're best left suppressed, if you ask me.
It's so bad.
What's a classic or essential that you haven't seen yet?
I haven't actually. That's the thing. I haven't seen so many movies. Like, that's why I didn't take part in like your blind spot series, because I'm like, every movie is a blind spot for me. But the thing I feel the most embarrassed about, like that I haven't seen, is that I haven't seen any Satyajit Ray movies. Satyajit Ray, the Apu trilogy guy from Calcutta.
Oh, okay. I think did you put that on my my Bollywood syllabus, which I'm still yet to go to watch.
His movies aren't at all Bollywood. I think they were all Bengali, which is a different. Bollywood movies are Hindi movies.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. See, I'm learning today. This is good. I like this.
Yeah. What we've given you wasn't even like typical Bengali, because typical Bengali is like, typical Bollywood is what, it's like how you would say like the blockbusters, right?
Right.
The summer blockbusters. That's what like actual Bollywood films are. They're like three tiers, okay? There's Bollywood. I mean, I learned all this in my film studies, even I didn't know. In my film studies class in college, so I wasn't aware of it until recently. There's Bollywood, there's like Indian movies, which are mostly Hindi, but they're not in that Bombay film industry business.
Gotcha.
And then there are regional movies.
Okay.
Which is because India has so many different languages.
Yeah.
The movies made in different languages.
Okay.
So
I guess like from a home base perspective, you're saying that the Apu trilogy is one that you should have seen by now.
He's like, there are no really great filmmakers from India as such. And he's like the only one, and he's from here. I'm from his land. I haven't seen any of his movies. It's really bad.
Well, get on it. You've inspired me, because anytime I hear about something like that I haven't seen, I usually try to track it down. So I'll see if I can find it as well and write my thoughts on it. And last but not least, what's a film that you wish you had made?
I don't know about making again. Like, it's the same thing. Like, I wish I had made like every film, because that's what I want to do. But I wish I was a part, like anything, part of Harry Potter, like anywhere. Like, I would have been a goblin. It's like a childhood dream, you know. It's not, and it's so hard for me to still like accept that it's ended. and it's not going to happen anymore. But you know, I still wish that I was British, that so that I could be somehow get in there.
I think it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think we're slowly all starting to go through withdrawal, right? Now that there's no more books and no more movies. No, I certainly can't argue with you there. I think I've heard that answer from a few different people, that's a film series. Those Harry Potter films are something they'd want to be involved in, and I certainly like. I agree. You know, I want to be British just because that's where all the actors were coming from, right?
Yeah, it was so. I mean, to be part of that legacy, like I hate. I'm like in Midnight in Paris, like hating their own generation kind of people.
Yeah.
But it's like Harry Potter was my generation, so that's like one thing I'm truly grateful for. To be part of that,
but it's very cool. Very cool. Well, there we go. That's more about Nikath, and we'll learn more about you folks coming up right after this. It's your chance to come talk to me. In episode 79, I asked people about directors. Sam Raimi directed the film that we're going to be talking about in a moment, Oz the Great and Powerful. And Raimi, of course, comes from more of a horror B-movie campy background. And I kind of wish he'd get back to that. So I asked people, what are other movies or what are other directors that they'd like to see get back to their roots? And I got some good answers. Sean Kelly from SK On Movies said Christopher Nolan. He's had his fun playing in the Hollywood blockbuster game with the Dark Knight trilogy and Inception. I now want him to tone things down and do another crime thriller like Memento, which is one of my all-time favorite films. As good as his blockbusters are, people need to remember why Christopher Nolan has become a name to be reckoned with in the first place. Well, Sean, I don't think you're going to get your wish right away, because we got the news this week that his next film, Interstellar, is going to be a great big sci-fi movie, and that's going to come out year after next. But Nick, I guess Sean's kind of got a point. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing Christopher Nolan do something smaller again.
Same, but I saw like the synopsis of it, and it sounds really cool, Interstellar. So I don't know. I like big movies as well.
Yeah, me too. And
he makes it well. At least like it's not like stupid.
He does, and like the thing I like about them is that he puts some brains into them, right? Like,
yeah.
He makes a big, you know, grand movie that still has a decent amount of intelligence to them.
Completely. Like, I remember when Inception had come out, and then everyone was like, I was really scared to go into it, because I'm like, oh God, I'm not going to understand it because I'm stupid. But it was fine. I was really scared that I like miss it.
That's good to know. The Vern from the Vern's Video Vortex, thanks for writing in, Vern, said Peter Jackson. He said Peter Jackson should go back to making low-budget horror films again. He has proved with the Lord of the Rings saga that he's a great director, but I want another Dead, Alive, or Meet the Feebles. This is kind of already a trend. People want directors to go back to doing the small stuff. I think some of these big-name directors are a little bit too far gone for that.
I have never seen any of Peter Jackson's horror films, though. I've heard a lot about them. I've never seen them.
I as well. I haven't seen, like, I haven't even seen The Frighteners. I haven't seen I haven't seen Meet the Feebles. But I'm aware of like I've seen shots from them and that kind of thing. You would like Heavenly Creatures. Have you seen that?
I've seen that, and I wasn't that into it. Like, it
no?
was fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, after something like Lord of the Rings, I didn't like it that much. I know a lot of people like it, but the other Melanie Lewinsky, that's her name.
Yeah.
The girl. Yeah. I don't know. So she kind of freaked me out.
Okay. Well, maybe I don't believe in it so much that I'd say watch it again, even though I'm known for doing that, of course. But I don't know. Maybe revisit it sometime. On Facebook, Aiden Redman of Best Movie Ever and Cut the Crap Movie Reviews said Neil LaBute. He did In the Company of Men, Your Friends and Neighbors, Nurse Betty. Lately, he's been kind of more caught up in doing stuff like The Wicker Man and Lakeview Terrace and Death at a Funeral. I think LaBute came up more than once, so that's definitely somebody who could get back to doing taking a little bit fewer paychecks and writing some better stuff. My friend Suminer from The Mind Reels said George Lucas. I'm not exactly sure exactly how she wants him to get back to his roots. I'd like to see him do something like American Graffiti, but I think he's well beyond that now. Courtney Small from Big Thoughts from a Small Mind said Oliver Stone, and I could not possibly agree more, because that's a guy who I think has not made a good movie in about 15 years now.
Well, what did he make? Savages. What did he make
for
that?
Oh, yeah. He made Savages. He made Alexander. He made W. Oh, cool. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, he made the Wall Street sequel.
Right.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of them, though, but they just look bad.
Yeah, like, nobody has told me good things. If somebody comes along and they says, you know, this movie's getting bad reviews, but I really like it, I'll give it a shot, right? It certainly depending on the source. But I haven't heard anybody say, in any of those movies, the Savages with Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, or W, I haven't heard anybody say, yeah, this is actually really good. So, no, Oliver Stone needs to really... wake up. Yeah. Steve Honeywell of 1001 Movie Review said Guillermo del Toro, for him, returning to his roots would mean actually directing pretty much anything, because he's been producing so much over the last few years. Steve is very nervous about Pacific Rim. I'm actually excited about Pacific Rim. What about you?
I'm excited too. I mean, I love Pan's Labyrinth, and I haven't actually seen any other. Oh, I've seen one of the Hellboys.
Okay.
And I like that as well. So I mean, I'm excited. I haven't actually seen anything bad from him.
Have you ever seen a good one that you'd like of his that's older? That's probably what Steve means when he says returning to his roots. Is have you ever seen The Devil's Backbone?
No.
Check that out. That's actually got a lot in common with Pan's Labyrinth, and you'd probably really dig that one. And one that came up from a few different people, Dan Heaton from the Public Transportation Snob, Alex Hulls on Twitter, and somebody else, I do apologize if I'm forgetting you, all mentioned David Gordon Green. Dan said, I don't mind it when a director goes in a different direction, but he had so much potential and has wasted it with these mainstream comedies he's made. George Washington and All the Real Girls are beautiful, transcendent indie films, and Snow Angels and Undertow were also excellent. I can't say the same thing about Your Highness. I think Gordon Green also did Pineapple Express.
And that was bad.
Yeah. It's okay, but it's certainly not All the Real Girls or any of these other movies that he's talking about. It's a real big departure.
I haven't seen any other. I have seen Pineapple Express because everyone was really into it.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was, I don't know. I mean, we're going to talk about James Franco, right?
So yeah.
I thought it was cool.
That's true. Finally, on Twitter, Tank from the Title Pending Movie Podcast said John Woo. He said he's doing a hell of a lot of period films lately. I want to make a hardcore, slow-mo, action cops and gangsters movie. Will from Silver Emulsion said as much as I enjoy all of his films, Peter Jackson needs to do another horror film. There we go. There's another vote for Peter Jackson. And possibly my favorite response, James Blake Ewing from Cinema Sites said Terrence Malick. He said he needs to quit being so esoteric and indulgent with his imagery. He can tell a beautiful, grounded story. This made me laugh because James loves Terrence Malick.
I'm really excited for his next few movies, but more than like the Terrence Malick thing, which I do, I mean, I like him a lot, but it's just the fact that there's Ryan Gosling and Michael Fassbender in that movie.
That's true. What about you? What was, did you come up with a director who you kind of wish would return to the roots?
Yep. Tim Burton.
That's my answer too.
Yay! As much as I liked Frankenweenie, and it was really nice. I really liked Frankenweenie, and he used to be like one of my favorite directors. He's still there. He's there in like my top 15, but like lately, it's just been so bad. Dark Shadows was like, it's not even. And Johnny Depp is my favorite actor, and like both of them together earlier used to be like, you know, like something magical. And everything that creativity is about, like at least to me, that's how. I mean, this was before I was watching more movies, so
right.
They were like the first actor director pair that I was completely crazy about.
They were like your introduction, right? Basically.
Yeah, basically, and like I was, and I mean, I'm a little self-obsessed, and Tim Burton's born on my birthday, So I had like that thing going for him. I've really tried liking his movies lately, but they've just been bad.
See, yeah. I like some of his recent movies. Like I'm the one who likes Sweeney Todd, and I actually liked Alice in Wonderland, and certainly now in hindsight, comparing it to Oz the Great and Powerful, which had the same producers, I actually even like it a little bit more. But I want him to go back to something more original. Like I like that he's gravitating to these established stories, but mix it up a little bit and give me some of your stories or some stories that you found that the rest of us don't already know. Like we already know Planet of the Apes, and we know Alice in Wonderland, and we reasonably know Sweeney Todd. So I wish that while I still think he's a really, really good visualist, he needs to kind of get a little bit more selective about his source material.
Yeah, I really want him to do something original. That's like the thing. That's why Frankenweenie was so good, because it was like back to how he had started.
Yeah.
And That's why I really like Frankenweenie. I actually had another name.
What's that?
In case someone had mentioned it. And it's weird. It's not like, cause this guy is like in my top two directors of all time, Quentin Tarantino. Because like, I want, as much as I love, I worship his movies, it would be so interesting. Especially seeing how he said that he's going to finish his filmography soon and stop directing and things, to like end with something like Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown.
You want to see another crime story.
Yeah, I really, I mean, I love his epics, I love his movies, but it would be so cool to like see him go back now and see what he would do with them now.
Yeah, no, I can get on board with that. That sounds like a great idea. Because he said, what has he said? He wants to make 10 films and that's it?
Yeah, it's horrible.
You sound so sad about it. Well, there we go. There's a lot of directors who we think should go back to their roots and do the old stuff again, I guess is what we're trying to say. Play the hits. But I don't actually have a question for the next episode yet. I just couldn't think of anything off the top of my head. So just keep your eye on my Twitter feed and the Facebook feed. I'll put up something for the next episode. But right now, I got nothing. We'll be right back right after this with the new slang. The new slang for this episode is Oz, the Great and Powerful. Oz, the Great and Powerful is directed by Sam Raimi. It is written by David Lindsay Abaire and Mitchell Kapner. It is based, of course, on the Oz stories written by L. Frank Baum. It stars James Franco, Mia Kunis, Rachel Weisz, Michelle Williams, Joey King, and Zach Braff. It is a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, and it tells us how Oscar Diggs, that's The Wizard of Oz, they call him Oz for short, it tells us how he got from being a carnival magician in Dusty, Kansas, to the Land of Oz, where he meets three witches, Theodora, that's Mia Kunis, Evanora, her sister, played by Rachel Weisz, and Michelle Williams, that's Glinda. He meets all three of these and basically gets mixed up in the battle for the future of Oz. Nick,
yes.
What did you think of Oz the Great and Powerful?
I had fun.
Did you? Really?
I did. And I like cried before I saw your review. I didn't read it, but I saw your rating and I'm like, oh crap.
No, that's good. That's good. We'll have a great discussion about it. So what did you really like about it?
We were talking about Marie Antoinette earlier and you said pretty and stuff. And I found it funny because I was just going to say like, I'm kind of shallow and I love how it looked.
Okay.
There were other things, like, I don't know, when I had actually gone to watch it, I was in a really bad mood because I had had a professor scream at me, and I was sitting in front, like behind me there were these group of tween girls who were like annoying me a lot, and I was like, oh, like, I'm not gonna like this movie because I'm already in a bad mood. There's no way this movie is gonna make it better.
Okay.
But like by the time like it ended, all of that had gone. And I felt like happy. I don't know. It was just what I needed.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
I wish I could agree with you. There were things about it I liked. Like I don't think it's a complete disaster. The look of the movie felt a little strange. It's not something that I want to say I didn't like the digital effects, because the fact of the matter is that it's 2013. Digital effects are the way that most things are created now. So it wasn't that I thought it didn't fit or didn't look right or didn't look real, but I almost thought it looked a little too lavish. Like, it looked, when he first gets to Wonderland that's what I had in mind. When he first gets to Oz and he's kind of flying over the vistas of all these valleys and all these mountains, and he makes that first walk through this gigantic garden, it seemed like he was in Wonderland. It didn't really feel like the world that I've come to know. It felt like something altogether different. And it kind of went from there. It sort of seems like Raimi and the production team were getting so caught up in what this thing should look like and how amazing it should look that they kind of forgot about making it feel true.
No, but that was like the thing. Like, okay, yeah, all that was there, but every time, like, there would be something Oz related, like, I was so happy when the yellow brick road appeared.
Yeah.
I was like, yes. And, you know, all that, like, anything Oz-related when it came, it just, like, I don't know, it just made me, that was, like, one of, like, my plus points. Like, every time there would be something Oz-related, I would just feel that much happier.
Right. And, well, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because, yeah, anytime they were going back to the familiar places, like, certainly when they get to the Emerald City and he walks into the wizard's chamber, you know, that room that we've known now for, what, like, almost 80 years from the original film, and the corridor that you can see behind him, that gave me a great smile, and that made me feel really happy. But anytime we got away from the established places, when they were just kind of walking through the countryside or that kind of thing, it didn't feel like it connected well enough.
I was thinking back on it, and you don't connect with it the way you connected with Wizard of Oz. I mean, the Oz character is nothing like Dorothy. You wouldn't cheer him on, basically. Like, I don't know. That was, like, one of the issues I had with the film, that there wasn't so much of a hero figure.
No.
Yeah, and as I was saying, James Franco is sort of a big reason for that. Because because the character is really interesting, right? Because he's, like, a con man, and he isn't all good and stuff and all that, but the fact that it's James Franco and he's, like, such a peculiar artist that I can't sort of separate him from being James Franco, and I'm like, is he for real or is he not? That was, like, one of the things. I wish he was played by, like, someone else.
Well, see, it's funny you mentioned that. I don't try to get distracted by what's not on the screen when I'm talking about a review, but in this case, I kind of have to. When this movie was originally intended and mapped out, Oz was supposed to be played by Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
And I really think that this was a part that was designed with him in mind, because he has the range that Franco doesn't really have. He can play that sly huckster. Yeah. He can play that, you know, that kind of slime, basically, is what Oz is. Like, let's be honest. But he can also play
the nicer stuff.
Yeah, he can play the more inspirational part. Unfortunately, James Franco has to do something that I really loathe when it happens. He has to get up and give one of those rallying speeches, that St. Crispin's Day speech to everybody towards the end of the movie about how what's going to happen for the future of Oz. And anytime I've seen an actor get up and make one of those speeches and miss the mark in terms of rallying the troops, it really feels like a flat moment.
I know. So. I was actually, someone mentioned, I was thinking, like, who else could have been. I thought of Robert Downey Jr. I didn't know that he was intended for the part. But then I thought, like, he does these roles so much.
Yeah.
That maybe someone else. So I was thinking, someone mentioned Toby Jones.
Yeah, that would have been really cool.
So good. Like, they would have got someone slightly older. Because then, like, you know, the witches thing, which seemed so shallow in this film, you know, because everyone was falling for his charms, it would have been more interesting because if he was older, then, like, he would have to be more charming.
Yeah.
I would have liked that.
No, it's funny because you've actually just led me to something else that I was disappointed with the movie is the witches in general, because they are the three female leads, and when we think about the Oz stories, it's always been something that's had really interesting female characters, both the Wicked Witch of the West and Dorothy. And when you like, there's other Oz stories where we get characters like Mombi and Ozma, and it's loaded with really, really interesting female protagonists. Here, unfortunately, we've got three women who seem to only be driven by their relationship to Oz, to the wizard. And, you know, one of them seems like she falls in love with him for reasons that are still unclear to me. One of them seems to want him to take the throne and be who she sees he can be, again, for reasons I don't understand. And that felt like a disappointment. It feels like, again, not to get too far off the screen, but in a world where we've got Wicked. How familiar are you with Wicked, by the way?
I haven't seen Wicked. No.
But like the music or the book or anything?
I mean, I know like the songs, and I have a faint idea of this, but okay. Not that much.
That actually might be my suggestion to you, like for the takeaway of this whole episode, is when you get a chance, get your hands on a copy of the book, Wicked. It's really, really interesting, and they will eventually be making it into a movie. But it really focuses in on the story of the Wicked Witch of the West and her relationship to Glinda, and just the complicated nature of where she comes from and what she does and why she does it. And I didn't get any of that here. So yeah. That disappointed me.
I don't know. I mean, I liked Michelle. I hate Glinda. Okay. Like, I haven't read any of the books, but in the movie, I don't know, I always thought Glinda was really sinister. And it's just something I've always been really suspicious of Glinda. But Michelle Williams actually managed to make me somewhat like her. So that's like a good thing. And I've never seen Michelle Williams do something like fantastical. So I mean, I guess I wasn't supposed to get like taken away by the stars who were acting. But I did like that. Like, I liked Michelle Williams playing the Good Witch. And then I'm still not over Rachel Weisz in The Deep Blue Sea. So I was, again, really into Rachel Weisz. And I like she was the only one who wasn't completely in love with the wizard.
Yeah. Yeah, I did like that.
And then Mila Kunis, oh God. She was really over the top, would be the phrase.
She was. It's kind of funny because I, at first I almost felt that this was a spoiler, but the producers have kind of tipped their hands already. There was for a long time there was kind of a question as to who was going to be the Wicked Witch, because there was no they weren't saying in the trailers and in the lead up to the movie, they weren't saying which one of Rachel Weisz or Mia Kunis was going to end up turning into the Wicked Witch. And I can't help but think that they chose the wrong woman.
Yeah, or like, I don't know. I mean, I've only read the book, and that's like when I was really young, on which Wizard of Oz is based. I haven't read any of the others, so I don't know which character comes where. But I kind of wish the characters of Evanora and Theodora were one character. Like, instead of having them as two separate characters, they weren't complete on their own, and together they would have been something really cool.
Yeah, you're right. It feels like they didn't quite have enough fleshed out there. You know, like, we're not going to get too spoilerific, but I do want to talk a little bit about the final showdown, because there is this there's a battle that happens, or kind of that kind of thing happens in the Emerald City. Basically, you know, the witches have gone wicked, and Oz needs to kind of reclaim. He needs to fulfill this destiny that we've been hearing about. And I think for me, I don't know, this is kind of where I was more on your side of things, where I was getting in a better mood and really enjoying what I was seeing, because what we see is so imaginative and is so exciting, and it turns into this great sequence of events. But I almost feel like for me that was almost too little too late.
When they have two of the witches, they fight in the end.
Yeah.
It was so Harry Potter-esque.
Yeah.
I could not. It was just like, what are they trying to do? Stop it. You know?
See, and I guess that's the thing, is that you mentioned, and rightfully so, you mentioned that it evokes Harry Potter. And this is a world where magic exists. I guess I wanted a little bit more magic.
Yeah.
So,
the final thing that happens with the wizard, that was amazing.
It was. Oh no, exactly. And that's the thing, is that I could, if I could, I would just buy that scene. I would just, like, I don't really think I'm going to be buying this Blu-ray, but I would love to have that sequence to watch again and again, because I think it's fantastic.
And even James Franco, for me, in that scene, he looked like he was perfect. I thought,
yeah, he, like, really cool. Like, I was like, oh, that's why they cast you. Because the whole time before, I was like, why do these women love him? Why are these people following him? And then he does what he does in the final scene. And it says to me, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
So... Well, unfortunately, it sounds like I'm a little bit more disappointed than you, but, you know, it is what it is, and there will be an audience for this, I'm sure. I imagine that there will be kids out there that like it, and for all I know, people who are really big Oz enthusiasts might like it too. But we wrap up our review with the souvenir. So, Nick, what was your souvenir?
My souvenir was the way Oz becomes the Wizard of Oz. I find it interesting. The same thing happened when I watched Hugo. Like, what they do is basically use, like, film as a part of, like, being magical.
Yeah.
And that was, like, you know, because I try, that's what had happened after I'd watched Hugo, because I could not, like, it's a world where film doesn't exist, and when you see it for the first time, the kind of power it brings along. And this is, like, a world, you know, where flowers, psychedelic ruby flowers, and people travel by bubbles and things.
Yes.
And they're still, like, that amazed by it. And I just love it.
Yeah. You know what, actually, that you mention it that way, you know what else it reminds me of is, this would probably make a reasonably good double feature with The Prestige.
I guess. I don't like The Prestige.
Oh, no. We'll have to talk about that off air. Well, for me, the takeaway, actually, we were talking earlier about parts of the world that didn't fit. But one of the parts of the world that I loved and I thought was perfect was Chinatown. When they're first walking down the yellow brick road, you see one of these signs that has arrows pointing in different directions. And one arrow points towards the Dark Forest. One arrow points towards the Emerald City. And then there's a third arrow that points towards Chinatown. And at first, I thought that was just a joke. I thought, yeah. I was like, they just thought, okay, let's just put this in here too. And it kind of gave me a little bit of a laugh. But then they arrive there, and it literally is a little village made out of China cups and China teapots. And they meet probably the most interesting female character in the movie, the little China girl, who unfortunately does not have a name. But it's just, that was the moment when they entered that place. I thought that was a place from the original movie that I wasn't remembering right, because it seemed, that very much seemed to fit with everything else that I knew. So that whole set and that whole place and that world of Chinatown, that would be my souvenir. I'd love to see a whole movie just in that place.
I like that, but the thing is, I couldn't help it. The amount of character that China Girl got, I wish, like, they would have distributed it to, like, the witches. Yeah. I don't know. I thought, like, there was too much on her. Like, she did a lot.
Yeah, no.
And then I was like, I wish the females were doing more, especially, like, the character of Theodora, who did have, like, you know, emotional side to her.
Yeah.
They had given it more to her. It would have been more interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we rate the movies on a scale of 1 to 4. So, Nick Hath, what do you give Oz the Great and Powerful?
It's somewhere between 2.5 stars and 3 stars.
Okay, that's fair, and you know, you're saying that you liked it, but obviously you didn't love it. For me, it's a close call. I got to go with 2, only because I did not care for it. I don't think it's a complete mess. Like, I'm not going to go down into 1.5 or 1. But for me, only 2 out of 4. There's some interesting ideas in play, but it just did not nail it for me. But let us know what you think of Oz the Great and Powerful. You can email me, Ryan@thematinee. You can find me on Twitter, where I'm matinee_CA, or Facebook, where I'm Facebook/darkmatinee. We will be back right after this with 2 more movies. We're going to turn the record over and play the other side right after this. A stranger thing that never changed my mind. I gotta take it on the other side. Take it on the other side. So for the other side, Nick, chose, it's from 2007, a film directed by Kevin Lima. You went with the Walt Disney movie Enchanted, which is a nifty mix of a little bit of animation and a lot of live action. And it's a story of what happens when basically a Disney princess gets yanked out of the fairy tale world and dropped into the real world of New York. Why did you choose Enchanted to go along with Oz the Great and Powerful?
Because it's about real world meets fantasy world, and it's the reverse, sort of, isn't it? So, like, in the beginning of Oz. Oh, I didn't talk about that. I really liked the beginning of Oz.
I did, too. Funny you should mention that. You're right. I really like the way they handled that introduction with the black and white and the square cropping.
I really like that. I thought it was really sweet. And, like, people don't talk about it, but the opening sequence, the moment it started, I started feeling really happy again.
Yeah, that's true.
Happy with movies, but it was. I mean, it's. I like when those sort of crafty things,
which we kind of got in Enchanted, right? Because it starts with, like, this is a movie from just 6 years ago, but it starts with hand drawn cell animation.
It's old school Disney. It's really cool, and then obviously then the wicked stepmom sends the Disney princess to real world New York, and it's fun.
Now it's funny because the one thing, you know, I mentioned that Oz the Great and Powerful didn't really feel true to the stories that we've come to know from the Land of Oz, but Enchanted actually is a good choice of yours because it felt very true to the animated genre. Like, it even starts with the old opening of the storybook, right?
Yeah, and Julie Andrews is narrating. It's really true. And it's like, it's suddenly, you know, there's like this whole surge of like fairy tale movies. This one is probably one of the only ones which got it right.
Yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's one of like those movies I can watch anytime.
It's funny. I'd seen this once before, like when it first came out on DVD and Blu-ray, and I hadn't watched it since, even though we own a copy. And when I was watching it last night, I remember I was laughing like hell. I had a great big smile on my face. I was thinking in my head, I'm really glad that Nick picked this because it's exactly the kind of movie I want right now. Something I was kind of taken with the movie is that it really shows Amy Adams' range, like. She really feels like a Disney princess. Like, she's got that very wholesome act to her. But this is, I watched this and it's, you know, just a few months after I watched her in The Master, where she plays something very, very different. I'm not crazy here. Like, she's an amazing actress.
She's amazing. And, like, I don't think there's anyone who doesn't like Amy Adams.
No.
And this is probably like my proper introduction to her. Like, I had seen Catch Me If You Can, I had seen Drop Dead Gorgeous, but Amy Adams was never like the person I knew. And then this came out, and then I was like, she's just amazing, and she has red hair. So
when you saw her playing slightly, you know, slightly more edgy characters in movies like The Fighter and The Master, was that like a little bit of a shock for you?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I can't help but associate her with movies like this.
Of course.
Like this, or Miss Pettigrew Saves the Day. Like, I always think of her as like she's amazing. I think she's a great actress. And she does like cute, she's like a real life Disney princess in this, which is, I don't think anything gets better than that, at least for me.
No, that's for sure. The other thing I like about the movie is we actually got a bit of a rash of this happening last year, and I say rash in a very good way, is it's a story of a princess who inevitably picks up the sword to kind of take matters into her own hands. She doesn't wait for her prince to come. She's deciding to take care of her own fate inevitably. And I think that that's a really good message for little girls now. We got that, of course, last year in movies like Brave and the two Snow White movies. But this movie was like 4 or 5 years ahead of that.
It takes the typical fairy tale, like, sorry, the typical Disney princess thing, and it turns it around. Like, in the beginning, it starts off, like, I watched Sleeping Beauty last year, and I did not like how useless she was in it. Because I had seen it immediately after Brave, right? So it was just like, what is she doing? Do something with your life. So that's how the film starts. Then you see, like, how everything sorts of, like, they break down all of, like, what do you say?
The tropes.
Yeah, of like these sort of movies. And by the end, she's like, she's the hero who they save.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good thing. And it's a good spin on fairy tales, because that's kind of the really big knock on fairy tales, is that a lot of the times, you know, the princess is just sort of waiting for the prince to come. But I like that we're able to take those classic stories and reinterpret them like this. Did you have, like, was there anything else that really struck you about Enchanted, either when you first watched it or when, did you rewatch it for this?
Yeah, I rewatched it, but I've seen it many times.
Oh, okay. You see, it's the kind of movie you could probably recite, right?
Yeah, probably. And, like, I own the songs.
Oh, yeah?
I love Amy Adams is my favorite, but I love James Marsden in this as well. He's so funny.
Yeah, he plays a really good dorky prince, right?
He's brilliant. And, like, for James Marsden, my only point of reference was, like, Cyclops, who I didn't like very much because I'm, like, all for Wolverine, so.
Okay.
And then I saw this, and I'm like, he's brilliant, you know? And he's so funny, like, even, like, in the end when he's, like, fighting off, like, his mother, evil mother, she goes, like, stop being so melodramatic. And he's actually being serious at one point, and then he goes, like, I don't know what that means. So it's really funny. I love all of his scenes.
Yeah, he really, just like Amy Adams, he's very fearless in this. He doesn't want to worry about trying to play it too sly or anything like that. He just goes with it. And that was really, really fantastic. The one thing I was actually a little bit sad about was, I mentioned Wicked earlier on. Idina Menzel is in this movie and she plays Nancy. She plays Robert's fiance. The one thing I was a little bit saddened about is that it's a movie, it's a musical, it's a movie that they break out into song, and they never give her a chance to sing. I was a little bit sad about that.
I didn't know that she sung. I mean, I remember she was then Glee. So then I was like, oh my God, it's that chick from Enchanted. And then I didn't know she could sing. But yeah, she's really good.
Well, she was, how familiar are you with Rent?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, because she's the original Maureen. So if you ever hear the soundtrack, she was Maureen, and she played Maureen in the movie as well, which is not that good. I'd recommend you skip that. There are two actual Disney princesses in this movie. Jodie Benson, who was the voice of the Little Mermaid, and Paige O'Hara, who was the singing voice of Belle in Beauty and the Beast. They're both little, they both have little bit parts in this movie in the background.
Okay, cool.
It's just one of those things that I think is really cool, yeah, about how, you know, how Disney put this together really well, right?
They don't do it really well.
Yeah.
It's a really nice movie. It's funny.
Yeah. Well, do you have a takeaway for Enchanted? Like, why you think it fits really well with Oz, or why do you think it would make a good double feature or a better selection than Oz?
Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
Yeah. Watch it for Amy Adams. Definitely. She's a real Disney princess. She embodies that role so well, and then you see the little changes come in her. But she's never, she embraces the role so well, so it's definitely Amy Adams.
I agree. And I think maybe that's the thing, is that when you get a great lead, which I think we said that James Franco really isn't in Oz,
yeah,
you can hang a whole movie on them. So where Amy Adams is concerned, you can't go wrong. All right, yeah, we'll be back right after this with my choice for the other side. Come right back, and we'll talk about another movie.
You remind me of the babe. Power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe.
I saw my baby cry for this babe could cry.
What could I do?
So for my choice for the other side, I actually got to kill two birds with one stone, because I got to pick a movie that Nick hadn't seen yet, and it is the sort of film that would potentially fall into my Falling for the First Time series. I went with Labyrinth, which is a 1986 movie directed by Jim Henson. It is the story of a young girl whose baby brother gets taken by a goblin king, and she's got to go through this labyrinth to get him back. The goblin king is played by David Bowie, the girl is Jennifer Connelly, and there are all kinds of weird little creatures and Muppets and everything that play in the background of this movie. So, Nick, you have to tell me, because I think I have a theory, how well does Labyrinth hold up?
It does not hold up.
Well, okay, tell me what you thought about your first experience watching Labyrinth.
One of the things which immediately I didn't like about it, like First of all, I don't know, Jennifer Connelly was really irritating as a lead. I did not like her at all. And then the thing is, like, the fact is these two other movies, their basis for, like, the difference between the real world and the fantasy world, like, how it changes, those made sense. This just happens out of nowhere. And I was so confused, like, ever since it starts. Like, she's in her brother's bedroom, and then suddenly there are, like, all these goblins, and then David Bowie appears, and I'm just like, what? I don't know, from the get-go. And then as much as I appreciate, like, the little creatures, the goblins, all the makeup department and whatever they've done, they look weird.
See, and it's funny too, because I know a lot of people my age and around my age who really, really love this movie, and I'm one of them. Like, I really, this is one of my first kind of favorite movies when I was 9 or 10 years old, and I like it a lot. But as I've watched it over time, I think to myself, you know, this is not exactly aging well. The one thing that I did like, though, is that it's, you know how Sarah, the main character, she's fascinated by fairy tales, right? Like, she's got books all over her shelf, and she's got toys, and she's got little knights and that kind of thing. The one thing that I thought about is when you're talking about those stories of, like, King Arthur and the Wizard of Oz and Alice in Wonderland, I did think that something about this story kind of fits within those, that it's original story that kind of fits within that canon. Did you get that sense, or am I really kind of stretching here?
It does, but I don't know.
But not quite as well, I guess, is what you're saying. That's unfortunate. I don't know. I think it's the one thing that we're kind of lacking these days is that everything seems to be based on something else. This was a completely original story. So even though that entrance into it is kind of bumpy, as you mentioned, I did think that once they got into the labyrinth, that it was a really great little world, this goblin world and this labyrinth and all these creatures that they meet along the way. I was especially thinking of things like there's the talking doorknobs or the helping hands when she falls down the pit. There's the guardians of the door, the two guys that are holding the shields, and one talks up top and one talks down bottom.
Now, I liked the world. I didn't like how it started, and then I didn't like her. I could not root for her at all.
Yeah, she's a brat, isn't she?
She is. She's so annoying, and she had no motivation. I was like, you put your brother into it. Stop trying to act sorry. So I don't know, and it was so weird. And, like, clearly, like, okay, this is what hit me. Like, the baby liked David Bowie better.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do. The other thing is, you know, I mentioned that the look of Oz didn't quite seem to work for me. The labyrinth has a really, really distinctive look, and it feels like we kind of miss that every now and then. Like, it's very, very typical of Jim Henson. Like, I think his fingerprints are all over this, and I think that's kind of the key sometimes is even if your protagonist is a brat, or even if you don't really follow with how the story, you know, falls into itself, you'll still go with it if you can walk down this yellow brick road with these characters and are really, really interested in what's going to happen the next time they turn around a corner, right?
Yeah, I like the look. I love the end. I forgot what it's called, the painting on which the last part is based on, with the stairs.
Yeah.
So that looked amazing.
Yeah.
Those were the things I liked about the movie. And, like, I can understand why it's a cult favorite.
Were there any parts besides the end of it, were there any other scenes or things like that you really gravitated to?
I really liked the part, you know, when she gets, she eats the peach, I guess?
Yep.
And then the bubbles come, and then there's, like, the whole ballroom sequence. I don't know. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was, like, something like, this is what I thought. I thought it was, like, Barry Lyndon makes sci-fi shot in a way, like, because it was kind of creepy, wasn't it?
It was really cool,
and I like settings like that, so I really like that part.
Definitely, no, that's a really good one.
And, like, you know, the details put into it. So I like the details of the movie. That's another thing, like how detailed it was. But
You like lavish looking scenes in movies, don't you?
Yeah, I'm Bollywood.
So. There's nothing wrong with that. yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because for me, I usually still, even though I think that this movie is a little bit rough around the edges, 25 year almost. Wait, where are we? 86.
27.
27 years later. Thank you. I'm good at math. 27 years later, even though I think it's starting to look a little rough around the edges, there's still some, the characters are what I gravitate towards. Things like, I love the look of Hoggle. I really, really love the look of Ludo. Ludo, that big.
Yeah, Ludo was amazing. I like Ludo.
He's great, right?
Obviously David Bowie. Obviously.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say that would have been my takeaway at the end is David Bowie, because he's so magnetic as the Goblin King. You can kind of see why she's almost attracted to him, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of creepy.
It is creepy. I understand why she's attracted. I was reading up on it, and then on Wikipedia, and then they were just like they went for like a Heathcliff thing with him, which I thought was cool. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that now. I certainly like that he gets to sing. I think if you put David Bowie in a movie and you don't let him sing, that you're missing a chance.
The Prestige. Okay. Anyways, because he was in The Prestige and then he didn't sing.
I know. I wanted to see I wanted to see Tesla sing, didn't you?
Yeah.
Exactly. Who doesn't want to see Tesla sing? So. Yeah. Well, it was my choice. So I'll wrap up The Labyrinth. It's a movie that, like I say, I think a lot of people are actually kind of overestimating in how well it holds up. But I think the story is really, really good. So the story is worth seeing. I definitely think that it's got some really, really interesting characters. And yeah, like you pointed out, David Bowie is probably the best thing about it. I could go for an entire second movie just about Jared and his life in the labyrinth and how he rules it over as the Goblin King. I was always kind of sad that there were no more stories from this world.
That I would have liked.
There we
without
go.
Her, with him.
I like it. Well, there we go. Labyrinth, Enchanted, and Oz, the Great and Powerful. That has been episode 80 of the Matinee Cast. Come on back on Monday, March 25th, for episode 81. We'll be talking about the incredible Burt Wonderstone. Nick writes, Being Norma Jean, a site you can find at beingnormajean.blogspot.com. Do you have anything coming up this week that you want to plug?
No, it's a very spur of the moment
blog. You're just gonna play it by ear, right?
Yeah.
I see. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, where can they find you?
Nikat_Z.
Spell that for people.
NIKHAT_Z.
And for my American listeners, the Z is actually a Z.
Okay, right.
Trust me, I got that, but I get caught with that every once in a while. My site is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find back episodes by going to thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them using Listen, Apple's podcasting app, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and the iTunes Music Store. It's all free. They give you ways to subscribe and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on Oz, Enchanted, or Labyrinth can be sent to ryan@thematinee.ca. You can find me on Twitter, where I'm matinee_ca, or Facebook, where it's facebook.com/darkmatinee. Nick, any final thoughts before we sign off?
Did you notice that in all three movies they ate like a fruit?
Where's the fruit in Oz? Oh, it's the apple. Yeah, of course. I didn't notice that.
And then I was just like, ooh, connection.
That's a great little connection. I'll have to use an image of somebody with the fruit for the picture when I post this.
Okay, cool.
Good catch. Well, there we go. For Nick, I'm Ryan. We'll see you at the matinee.
Bye.